pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. It's finally Friday. Hour number three is now underway. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, text me. Let me know what's on your mind. I'll get to your text here in just a moment. A few things. $7.70 toll proposal on the table here for the new Mobile Bay, Mobile River and Bayway. How you feel about that? I-10, at least for now, has a bona fide active proposal that looks like it could happen. Also, Tommy Tuberville ballot challenge tossed out by the Montgomery County judge, Circuit Court Judge Brooke Reed. And I'd say this, you ballot challenger folks, you can't win in the Montgomery Circuit. You're not going to win in the Alabama Supreme Court. A Democrat judge said, this really isn't where we are going to adjudicate this. So that's a life support. And I suspect it will have a timely demise here in short order. Graham Plattner fallout still underway. We talked about that with Todd Stacey. What do you think of this story? Are you familiar with the Daughters of the American Revolution? One of these civic groups. Well, just like anything, we can't have nice things in America. There's a push underway to get transgender females and the Daughters of the American Revolution. You heard it here, yes. And they're trying to stop that. There's a big battle underway within that. But there's like these do-gooder inclusion types who want to do this. No one was really asking for it, but we're going to do this. I don't know. I find it all very, very off-putting. But these are we're gonna have to have a skirmish at every female club, every civic organization. I'm gonna do League of Women Voters next or something. As if suffrage was to ensure the voting rights of transgender females. But three chapters in Alabama, I think, are fighting on this. It's kind of fascinating to me. The culture wars are underway. They're alive and well in America. They went away for a while. I felt like during the Obama years, you had an active grievance industry, you always have, although it's been neutered because they've overreached. People just said, this stuff it's all virtue signaling at this point. We're not making strides for humanity and equality or diversity or inclusion. We're just going through the motions to show that we care. And the public's catching up to it. But in some messages in American culture, it's still a thing. Read more about that story, 1819news.com. Let's roll through some text messages here, as promised. Mike, I would love to know how much Mobile and Baldwin County contribute each year through the gas tax to the rest of the state. I'm positive it would more than cover the needs of our area, including financing the bridge and Bayway. Then we could toll everyone from out of the area to create our own rainy day fund. But, we have not just gas tax, but we have the offshore oil. There's the tourist economy. There's a lot of revenue generators in South Alabama that they don't necessarily have in other parts of the state. And it's like, we should get our fair share thing is a little little trite. But when we talk about it, like, well, okay, let's do a cost benefit analysis here. And if this is indeed a revenue enhancer for the entirety of the state, we're all one state here. Why wouldn't you invest the resources in this part of the state to help that revenue generation? Why wouldn't you look at like making it better to make it more of a piggy bank you could rob later on? Let's keep rolling. Whoever texted you that, Caroline, always says, was very correct. It's fine. We all do it. Derek, with grade level of -1, you got to spoon feed them. Fire Dog sends me. Well, after Grand Platner, I'm just qualified for office as well. I have a tattoo of a little pony dancing on a beach ball on my left butt cheek. I could send the 106.5 text line a picture if you all want to see. Hard pass. Unnamed texter. Well, it says a lot here. Thompson seems like a capable person. Should have won Congress. We need to figure out a way to dismantle substantive due process and the novel theories of federal courts to strengthen the Article 4 power. States and Congress need to think long-term. Personality culture not sustainable. Take the weapons out of the hands of the federal government. The novel readings of the 14th Amendment need to be dismantled. It's destroyed our form of government. He continues, or she continues, probably a he. Trump proves that Platner-style demagoguery can work if executed competently. Unfortunately, there's no real incentive to reform the federal government to bring it in balance with the Constitution. And the public understood where most of the $39 trillion has gone, and if we had a functioning media political class that reported on, discussed these issues at length, we would have a chance to get the reforms that we need. He continues, she continues. That's one good thing about municipal elections here is that they actually ran on issues. I mean, there was well with some personality stuff, but there were substantive things that were discussed. Well, on your first one, the demagoguery, we'll hit that. It works. There's just a, I think these consultants really kind of lead the charge on the demagoguery because it doesn't always work. Ask Wes Allen or whoever. Jared Hudson, the attacks and the ad hominem, it can be a trick play, but I think the class warfare stuff in some places in America really does work. But the point I keep trying to make, and maybe it hits, maybe it doesn't with some of you, that this is viewing these election cycles in a very short period of time and not really looking beyond that election cycle. You can keep doing this and doing it and doing it, but people at some point are going to expect results. They're going to expect action. You've got to make it look like you're trying. And what you see on a nightly basis on your left-leaning cable outlets, and I think this is where a lot of this comes from, it's just like, we're going to get that Trump, wait till we get Congress, we're going to investigate it for trying to change the name of the Kennedy Center or whatever. And that plays to some people. But generally speaking, that audience is small. That crowd is small. It's going to come out and vote in a midterm election. Does it necessarily translate to a presidential cycle? So what happens is you sort of have a reactionary populism. People want results. They want something to happen, to come of it. And they're not really get that. I mean, we could gripe about it all the time about Republicans. But we don't. The same thing is going on the Democratic side. And that is what has led to New York City's congressional delegation moving decidedly left. Take, for example, Dan Goldman. He led the charge on impeachment. He's the young, fresh face, the brand the Democratic Party really wanted to promote, somebody who they thought was a rising star. He lost his primary. Maybe some of it was anti-Semitism. You know, entirely possible. But I think generally speaking, as is the case in the other elections we talked about, it's just there's an appetite for more. That just being the anti-Trump guy is not really satisfying the Democratic Party base these days. So, like, how did we get to this point? It, you know, you turn the volume all the way to the max as long as you have, and you keep saying things that are just patently false about your opponent. People believe it. Fine, they can believe whatever they want. It's a free country. But then they look at it and say, well, you said you were going to do this. Why didn't you do it? Why are you voting for this defense appropriation? Why are you voting for this Trump thing? Why are you opening the government? If Trump is so bad, he is so bad that we're not going to have another election, why aren't you opposing him in every possible facet? Why are you trying to go along to get along here? Why are you ceding any moral ground or anything? Well, that's just the way Washington works, and you got to compromise. We don't want compromise. You told us that this guy was going to take over the country. We'd never have another free election. And here you are voting for his whatever bill to open the government, to fund his administration. Why are you doing that? And then you have primary elections that have consequences. But you created this environment for short-term gain. In the long term, it's going to backfire. It's just the lawfare. It's the same is true with the lawfare. If you play all of the hits, the last-ditch efforts, the break glass in case of emergency, and all you care about is winning that election, and then you'll figure it out later, these are the consequences. You said, hey, we want an extra congressional seat in Alabama and Louisiana. This is how we're going to do it. And it worked for a cycle. And then it gets challenged to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court goes 180 degrees the opposite direction. That's the truth. Abortion's a similarly with abortion. Any restriction on abortion is just unconstitutional. You take it to federal court, then the court looks at it differently. It says, no, we think the states ought to be able to regulate abortion. Well, then that becomes not just regulation. It comes becomes an outright ban in the laboratories of democracy. So these things, they accumulate. They have repercussions. Well, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning, or what's left of it. So to come on the program, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion. Also, a quick programming note coming up on Monday's broadcast. Shane Stringer, state lawmaker from Mobile County, and Dale Jackson from WVNN and Yellowhammer News, and then a guest to be named later. I will, at some point over the weekend, complete that. But that's what to look forward to on Monday. Still rolling through some text here. I can't believe that Mike has found a way to blame Israel Netanyahu for the new toll. So the person wanting us to say the name of Nolan Wells also be recognized as dozens of other black youths killed this week are just one that allow her to beat the tiresome victimization drum. Perhaps. See. Good morning, Jet. Do you foresee someone stepping forward to lead a new no tolls effort or someone with a better proposal? I think it's inevitable. This is a tough pill to swallow on the tolls. It's just something culturally that's going to be a hard sell to people who use that bridge. Or even think about it. We may be beaten down over it. It may be that folks are kind of I'm tired of fighting over this. Next time we do it, if we kill it now, the next toll will be $10. I think there's a lot of things. If the public goes along with this, there needs to be some kind of guarantee that it's just not going to increase on its own. It's not going to self-perpetually increase. That you're locked into this dollar amount. And maybe you could negotiate the dollar amount down. The what they wanted us to do was really push the notion that for locals, it was going to be cheaper. But the baseline toll, it's like if you walk up to the movie theater and you don't buy your tickets online with a coupon or whatever, this is what you pay. That is the price tag. No discounts applied. That's the base pay. If you're just driving cross country and you're coming through Alabama and you've got to pass through Mobile and cross the Mobile Bay, that's the price tag. That is a lot. What are the numbers here? How did they come to this number? Where is this money going? Like Sean said yesterday on the program, we need like the whiteboard explanation. Sean, most of the tags I see down here at the beach are Mississippi, Texas, Louisiana. Beach Express won't help anything. The do-nothing R's have created this environment, too. Unnamed texter, when is the Trump phone coming in the mail? Did you get a Trump phone? Oh, this is our grievance texter. I had to give him a nickname, or her a nickname. No, I'm not going to read that, Derek, but I agree. Captain Doug, how's this tool crap going to work? Toll crap going to work when the causeway is closed for flooding? Yeah, one would assume they would have to waive the toll for in the events of emergencies. And I would say if the causeway is flooded, then would that constitute an emergency? There's a lot of details that got to be walked through here for me. I'm never going to be pro-toll. This is the bid that they had made by kicking this can down the road for years and treating Mobile like the third-rate stepchild, which is what is the case here. They rebuild 2059 through downtown Birmingham. I don't know who was asking for that. They've repaved all these roads in this state. This should have been more of a priority over the years, but it just never was because I firmly believe it's Mobile. And there's a sentiment here, hey, you could do whatever to those folks down there, and people in Birmingham won't even notice. And that's the way they have operated here for decades. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Now, if your leather jacket means to you what this hat means to me, then I guess...
sign not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. Now, it won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning, 251-343-0106. Time permitting, I'll get to whatever text messages are remaining on the roster here. Joining us now, he's our returning champion. We do this every Friday about this time, but State Senator Chris Elliott, my state senator, joins us on the line. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing well. Glad to be back in Baldwin County and not in Montgomery like we were yesterday. So always good to be here for the weekend.
Any happenings on the contract review?
A little drama related to prison lawyers, corrections lawyers. Representative England is understandably upset about some cost of litigation and then the bankruptcy of that. That medical provider that he correctly pointed out when we entered into the contract was going bankrupt as we entered into the contract. And then we were not surprised when they went bankrupt.
So why did we enter into that contract?
I believe initially there was a lot of dust up about it, but at the end of the day, they met the terms of the RFP and were the low bidder. And so the Department of Corrections selected them, even though they were starting to go bankrupt in other states. And that's something we probably need to look at in our bid law. There were also some funds paid to them that did not get used for the purpose they were stated. And Representative England, I certainly don't want to speak with him, but his point was that's fraud, that's criminal deception, and that we ought to prosecute them. And I think we're probably headed in that direction.
Yeah, it's a matter of changing the bid laws so that if you're going bankrupt in another state, you're not eligible to participate.
Probably not a qualified bidder at that point.
Yeah, well, fair enough. All right, well, you know the question on everybody's mind, the new bridge proposal here. Walk us through it. Tell us what we need to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the details that are out are probably, pretty widely known, and I'm not sure I'm going to shed a whole lot of light on that. The process from here is that the MPOs have got to consider that, what ALDOT has proposed at this point and whether or not to keep that on the Transportation Improvement Plan. If you'll recall, last time this kind of blew up, the MPOs decided that the toll structure that was presented by the governor and ALDOT was not acceptable. And so they used their authority to remove the project from the Transportation Improvement Plan, and it stopped the project in its tracks. Subsequently, the State Department of Transportation came back, asked the MPOs to put it back on the STIP with some caveats, right? And that was a pretty hefty, we'll call it a frequent user discount, right? A monthly fee that allowed almost unlimited, traffic, and then a cap of $250 toll, and that was with this transponder, right? The Algo Pass, and so that data has changed a little bit. The new proposal from ALDOT has it going essentially from $250 to $3. And so the question is going to be whether or not that's enough of a change from what, was told to the MPOs previously to warrant them blowing up the plan again. And honestly, I don't see that happening. I've heard comments from the MPOs and comments from leaders on both sides of the bay, and I just don't see that that's something they're going to blow the whole plan up over. Interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I know there's a lot of details to be ironed out here, but what's to kind of keep this from getting, for whatever reason, the toll increasing at some point, or they tack on some kind of fees like they did at the wharf? Now, that was a private bridge, a separate set of circumstances, but the toll by plate thing and there's a lot of little things here that I'm not convinced are enough to protect the consumer.
I don't have all the details on it, and there are a lot of nuances that will still have to be decided and rules that will have to be promulgated by the State Department of Transportation. I know back in 2019, this is, 7 years ago, there was a bill passed by the legislature. I believe Senator Sessions sponsored it, that kind of put some collection fees on, if you didn't pay the toll. There were some fines and fees associated with that, up to and including, not re-registering your vehicle if you didn't pay those fees. And so, that's more from an out-of-state standpoint, right, to make sure that our friends from Louisiana and Texas and Mississippi, that are coming to the beach or just passing through, actually help offset a lot of the cost of this toll. So we'll see, what the details are on that and what those, those rules that get promulgated are. But it seems that this is exactly what you and I have talked about for a number of years now, and that is that the project needed to be de-scoped, right? And I said that, again, probably 4+ years ago. We need to change the size of this project. And that's really what the Trump administration has brought to this project, is a relaxation of a lot of the Obama and Biden requirements that got us to this ballooning cost. And so this project, if we did the full Bayway replacement and everything else that the former administrations, federal administrations, were going to require, would have probably cost twice as much. And so that was just an insurmountable amount of money that was never going to work for the state of Alabama and certainly for our region. And so the Trump administration, that's why you hear Coach Tuberville and Senator Britt really, really crowing about the administration, is they were able to essentially reduce the cost of this project almost in half simply by relaxing a lot of the federal regulations.
Well, and so, I mean, I guess the timing here and the urgency has a lot to do with the availability of the federal funds and just the idea that we needed to move here, or those are going to evaporate.
There is some urgency with the infra-grant funds to get moving on those. And again, I've seen a lot of chatter online about, the Biden administration and IIJA was the only one that's really provided any funds for this bridge. And listen, there's no way to say, hey, the feds didn't provide through IIJA, about $500 million for this bridge. But it's also, I think, not well informed to not understand that the Trump administration probably cut $3 billion worth of cost out of this by not making us do all kinds of other things that are frankly probably necessary or not, are not something that the state of Alabama was ever going to afford. And so I think it's important to look at both sides of that.
Well, how much lower would that toll have been if we had to build a $1 billion West Alabama corridor?
there are transportation projects all around this state that compete for the funds. And I know on your show, you talked about a lot of them, whether that's the North Alabama, Northern Bypass in Jefferson Shelby County, or improvements on 565 in the Huntsville area, or the West Alabama corridor. And so, if we spent nothing but money in South Alabama, then would we have to pay a toll? Probably not. But is that realistic? No, of course not. The Northern Beltline is, of course, a much different project from the funding standpoint. Senator Shelby was successful in getting it designated to receive 100% federal funding. And so that's just because they have availability to those Appalachian funds. And as much as I'd like for the Appalachian funds to come all the way down to coastal Alabama, I don't want a lot of our funding that we get that's specialized to us going north. So that's the nature of the beast.
Is this do we think this will be permanent? Or will we, eventually the financing will be paid? Would the toll go away?
It is my understanding that this toll will pay for up to 49%. Again, another Senator Shelby victory up to 49% of the project. And it's important to note that the rest of that project cost will have to come through infra grant or funding from the state. So we're still talking about, you know, above $1 billion coming from the state, which is a huge amount of money. So that's an important thing. And then that toll revenue may help finance the second phase of this project, which is the replacement of the Bayway and elevation of the Bayway. I think the other thing to note is that this Bayway still has useful life in it, right? People are driving on it every day. And if we can get another 15, 20 years out of this Bayway, my goodness, let's do it. It's taken us this long to get here. Let's get all the useful life out of that infrastructure that we can before we abandon it, tear it down, and at least, you know, utilize it while we can. And so I think that the likelihood that toll sticks around practically for you and I for the rest of our lives is probably pretty good. But the good news is I do think we'll see a bridge in 5 years.
Well, talk about the de-scoping aspects of it. And, you know, the first iteration, it was the Mac Daddy of all bridges. It was big enough or was high enough for the Bayway was going to be high enough for a 1,000-year flood. The River Bridge was going to be tall enough for the biggest cruise ship in the world. Is that still in play here?
The EIS, the Environmental Impact Statement, really governs what has to be done in this process. And it took so long to get through that federal process that the State Department of Transportation was very reticent to change a lot of those parameters. So the bridge height is set where it was set before, and it will be built at that height. The second phase, and it's important to note, we're not talking about two projects. We're talking about the second phase, will be that elevated Bayway and widened Bayway. But that will likely happen much further in the future, down the road. And so the parameters laid out in the original EIS, to my understanding, have not changed.
So we're getting the bridge of all bridges still. I mean, are people worried about the backlash here? This is a higher toll. I don't know what's changed other than you could do some things to ease the burden on local residents here. But in general, it seems a lot like the same thing that got rejected in 2019.
Well, I think you've got some better controls over the toll amount, right? And that's set. You've got this frequent user, unlimited user amount and discount for locals, and then the algo price is a significant reduction. I expect everybody around here to get that algo pass and pay the $3. I don't expect everybody to pay the $60. I mean, Jeff, I probably go to Mobile 4 to 5 times a year. It's just not a place. I don't have to go there a lot, and I don't go. I know I go to Montgomery almost every week, but that's not a direction I go very often. And so I'll probably be the guy that's got that $3 pass. But do I think there's going to be some pushback? Yes, of course. People, recoil at the thought of tolls, and they don't like it at all. But I think that the MPOs on both sides of the bay, and they really are the ones that hold the power to check this process, as they demonstrated before, resigned themselves some years ago that some toll was going to be necessary to move the project ahead. And that from a funding standpoint, this thing is going to cost as much as the entire general fund budget for the state of Alabama. And so, I think those MPOs looked at that and said, we're gonna have to do this. And this cost is very similar. It is not increased very much from what they approved and said yes to some years ago. And so I think that while some may recoil at the concept of a toll, I think the MPOs are likely to keep it on the step and keep it moving forward.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, like last time, I mean, it was grassroots. It kind of boiled up, and I mean, you find yourself in a tough spot where you initially supported it, then they changed a bunch of things. And so right. The question I guess is, like, if they were willing to do that, and now we're going to have a different governor. Maybe it's just a totally different set of circumstances. But, like, there's still that possibility where this won't be enough. This is not going to beat these benchmarks. I guess the question is there any kind of wish casting, any rosy thinking here behind this proposal?
I don't think so. And again, I don't have all of the details. This is not a, it's important for you and your listeners to know this is not a decision that I've come to, right? Or the legislature has come to. This is largely a governor decision and an ALDOT director decision. And again, requires the assent of the MPOs. But again, I think that when you start looking at the long-term financing for the TIFIA portion of this capital stack, that's the federal loan that will be paid back with the tolls. I think that, you know, that math, right, the actuarial math on that is going to be so conservative that it's going to cover the debt service on that note. And then when it's done, it's gone, and the toll will go to essentially to fund the second phase of the project at that point.
Well, why not wait till we get a new ALDOT director, new governor? I mean, is the timing that urgent that we have to rely on, I think, someone that's betrayed the public trust on a number of levels? And here we are on the way out the door, putting our faith in this governor and her ALDOT director, who I think is overstayed his welcome by years, and just trust us, everything's going to be okay.
I do think that time is of the essence as it related to the federal infra grant money that was already there and other federal appropriations. And so I think that we needed to move forward with this in order to keep from losing that money. And so I think that's why the governor and the director have moved with the speed that they have. You're correct. It's going to be under the wire. I mean, this governor is done in January of next year, and you're likely to see a ribbon cutting and an announcement, and things, you know, have already started being signed. But before the end of her term, she's wanted to do this for a long time. And Jeff, like her or not, when this governor gets something on her mind, she is a force, and she's been routinely elected overwhelmingly by the people of the state of Alabama. And this is what she's going to do.
And we should talk about this all the time. Is she the one calling the shots here? I mean, I like I said, there's a lot of reasons to be skeptical of this and what this governor's doing as a lame duck on her way out. And we have questions about her health and how aware is she? I mean, is she really the one making this call here? And why, you know, it's a big ask, I think, of the public to go along with this.
I understand where you're coming from. I'm not sure how germane, the governor and her health and her longevity and whatever else is to a project that's been going on for decades and decades. But, those are all questions I'll let you and your listeners debate. But at the end of the day, I do think overall it is a positive step for the region to have this kind of infrastructure investment made in our region in an area that critically needs it. Do I love the financing method? No. Do I wish there was more, state involvement or federal involvement specifically? Yes, of course. But do I think this is a reasonable path forward? I do. And I think that most local leaders agree with that. You've seen that so far that have really been around this project for a long time. It's easy to do nothing. It is harder to do something, and it's really hard to do something big. And this is something big.
Senator, we always appreciate your time. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for hopping on.
You got it, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Say Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion here on the line. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Spend my dollar, park in a holler, need the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight, make a little loving, a little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon night. Fits my life. Oh, so right, my Dixieland
delight. More, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Coming up on Monday's program, we'll hear from Shane Stringer, state lawmaker from Mobile County, and from Dale Jackson, WVNN, and Yellowhammer News. Derek, does any portion of the late fees go toward the balance? I don't know. Milton, how can they predict tolls that are for the future? It sounds like a whole bunch of lip service about nothing. Well, they could predict traffic in the future. Terry, how much safety will be compromised by squeezing three lanes out of an elevated highway designed for two lanes, the Bayway? Aren't there a minimum number of lane widths and shoulder requirements in interstate highways? There are, but I guess they're going to figure it out. Earl, a toll on the interstate bridge equals government failure. And then Mike, even the guys who are going to build the bridge have told me the bridge isn't going to help much unless I-10 is six lanes, laned to at least 59, and better would be Bucky's, including the Bayway. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff, a couple things. First of all, yesterday we came up with the idea of you're looking for a business. It's going to be helicopter, like tow helicopters, because we won't have the lanes, the emergency lanes, so the helicopter will have to go out there and hook up the vehicle and take it off. That way.
But they just, like, you think they were just waiting for flying cars?
I think so. I wonder if we would get to that before 2031 or whatever we think this is going to be finished.
Well, but imagine they were building this tunnel in the 70s and the Bayway or whatever.
The Jetsons were on. That was pretty recent. Yeah, probably.
And they're looking at it like, you know, we just got to get through to, like, the late 90s or something. And then we're going to have flying cars. And then it never happened.
Hey, by the way, coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, you and I both love old maps. Well, pull an old map up of the city of Mobile and notice that big donut hole in the middle where the malls are now. That used to be called Rag Swamp. Josh Givens joins me from Mobile Bay Magazine. We're going to talk about Rag Swamp and the history of that and what it looked like before it looked like malls. And coming up in a couple minutes, Mobile City Councilman Ben Reynolds. That and a whole lot more on Midday Mobile.
They drained the swamps and developed the land, ladies and gentlemen.
That's where we sit.
Yep, John Anderson song.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Seminole Wind, right?
Yeah, you're right. Got to get out of here. We'll try to do better, buddy. Sorry, Phyllis, forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Bohr Show on FM Talk 106.5.